You're about to hear the recorded audio diaries of Michael Swaim, Adam Ganzer, and Abe Epperson, transmitted to you from another dimension through the wonder of podcast technology. Lost in the multiverse, they have to dig into a different piece of multiversal fiction each episode in the hopes of finally discovering a way back to their reality. How do they know this isn't their reality? Because one of them is being a real asshole. Will our heroes ever make it home, or will they inadvertently explore our obsession with multiverses, alternate timelines, and parallel worlds, and tie it all into a conversation about postmodern art, pop culture, and what it means to be a human right now? This is Escape from the Multicurse.
I offered a slow roll and you just threw it right away.
Hey, maybe I'll keep it.
Yeah, now look how stupid we look.
All right, let's just, you know what? Let's just do this up. Let's just open this thing up like a normal can of beans, okay? All right.
Like a normal can of beans.
I'm going to do in the intro the way I want to do the intro,
just,
okay?
What do you mean by opening it like a normal can of beans?
Open it normally.
You'll find out if you shut up.
Like, not a weird way
it.
Of opening a can of beans.
Does he spit it on his finger like it's a fucking basketball?
I don't know. That's why it would be weird.
Okay. I really enjoy the idea of your creativity opening cans of beans.
Look, we're small beans. Sure. And we're here to discuss the pop culture obsession with multiverses. You know the name. You heard the intro. Parallel universes, time loops. As the intro said, we're trying to get home. We keep hopping through these dimensions. Adam.
Yeah.
Ganser is here. I'm Abe Epperson. And there's also a very quiet Michael Swaim somewhere around here.
I've been very quiet.
I'm just saying. Yeah, I haven't heard
it's
you
been
speak.
A problem.
We're trying to get home, but we know something's off. Because almost always one of us is an asshole.
I just want to be clear with you, Abe. I'm not intentionally being the asshole right now. I really got excited about the bean thing.
You're still out, Adam. No, you're fine. You're fine.
I got excited about the bean thing.
I'm being surly because you didn't like my can of beans.
I did like it. I loved it.
Let's open up this can of beans.
Adam's the guy who seems like the asshole early on, but that's just a distraction in the whodunit of it all. You could say he's the red herring. Get it? Red hair? Red herring?
Wow. That was very good.
I guess.
He's not necessarily a betrayer or the cipher in this situation. Right. That's right. True. We're talking about The Matrix.
Woo! Oh, dang.
1999, baby. It started it all.
I guess movies are back because of this.
There weren't even movies before that.
Man, do you remember the first time they screened The Matrix in 1908? Everyone dove out of the way when that train comes at the camera.
Yeah. That
and was when the bullets. Matrix. Yeah.
That's the intro. I think we should jump right in, guys.
I don't know. We're living with that, so we may as well.
Hey, this is my brand of podcasting. Okay?
I love it. I love you.
Thank you.
That's typical.
Thank you. I love you. As we enter our first section where we discuss in this show, what are the rules in play in this? Is this a multiverse story? How is it unique?
Yeah.
We're walking. Let's put it on the multi-map.
Let's map it. Jerk it. Ooh. Twist it. Map it.
We are so bad in the show about like what the format is. Is this where we just discuss?
This is our takes. We do the takes.
I don't even know, man. I don't even know.
That's next. Those are the takes. I disagree. I think this is where you describe in a nutshell what you think the movie is using the multiverse trope to do.
That's right.
Yes?
That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah. I see the difference between that. Forgive me.
And I'm also going to cut this, but that's excellent that we all agree now.
Fuck you. I'm going to cut that. I'm going to cut you saying I cut this, so you can't
you
cut
can't
that.
You can't cut shit. Wow. So on the multi-map, Do you think this is a multiverse story?
Yeah.
It's multiple reality, I guess, is a better way of saying it. But it totally works, right?
Yeah.
I think it is unique in the multiverse story because the move it... Because, like, okay. So let's look at some of the previous ones that we did, right?
Yep.
Let's take Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, right? You get a choice in the form of an attempt to avoid grief and loss by essentially like taking it from somewhere else, a different reality. Because the movie posits that everything belongs in its right place, balance is restored by going back to this quote home, right? Now the Matrix just says both realities are true, but you have the choice to live in a reality or a prison of comfort, right? So that's unique. That's like free will is no longer derogatory and criminal in this setup. You don't have any, there's no correct answer. I mean, there is, but that's just because, you know, like they're heroes. I don't know. That qualification doesn't exist in this movie. Hmm. And it's the bread and butter of other multiverses. That's what I would say makes this like a unique multiverse or unique multiple reality story.
Interesting.
Hmm.
I like that take. Am I allowed to go now? Can I go now?
Please, yeah, sure. Yeah, of course.
Great.
Oh, so, you asked Abe. Okay, I see.
Oh, he does wear the I'm important.
He's taking the reins this time. I'll give him that. Yeah.
I'm not gonna fight it. I don't want to fight it. That's fucking an asshole move. Hey, so I've been thinking a little bit about how this movie, what's unique about this movie in the multiverse. Certainly it's a multiverse in that there are multiple layers of reality, and multiple dimensions, but they also kind of, they like telescope in a little bit similar, like not exactly the same, but similar to the way the Looney Tunes one does, where sort of nestled
Space with, Jam.
Nestled, excuse me. Yeah. Space Jam. Nestled within the reality of the, you know, human versus robot fight. Is this other simulated reality that explains the reality that you know it. And the concept here is basically addressing the feeling of unreality that so many people sort of connect to spiritually, right? Like this sense, like this can't be all there is. There's got to be more than this. And, you know, there's millions of people's lives are a testament to that being a human thing, right? And this is a kind of another materialized version of it. And by materialized, I mean explained through material causes. But also the movie, especially in the later installments of the franchise, which I think are fair to bring in here, it kind of implies that the reality that the humans are in the war with the machine is also not real. And by that, I mean Neo has powers that are not possible in human reality as we understand it. So that creates this idea that either the reality that this movie is commenting on, or I guess dimension is maybe another way of saying it, is like human reality is actually different than we think it is. Like what human beings are is actually different than what we are because we are the simulation. True. That's one possibility.
Our simulation isn't actually necessarily reflective.
And it's inaccurate.
The
right,
real
it's
world.
Inaccurate.
So right. We living in the Matrix, watching the movie The Matrix, obey a different rule set.
Mm. Correct.
Possibly.
Correct. And like, I think there's a little, like one of the ways that we really like experiencing multiverses is through what I'll call a kind of Elizabethan cosmology. And what I mean by that is that like, it's a series of like overlapping circles, like not like a Venn diagram, but more like like a Russian nesting doll,
the
where
Olympics
each layer
logo.
Of reality, yeah, yes. each layer of reality kind of is a fully encapsulated thing that's nestled within a larger thing.
Oh no, you were right. Russian nesting doll then is the
yes.
analogy. Okay.
Thank you. I did know what I was saying. Thank you.
Or the layers of an everlasting gobstopper.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Actually, you're right. Like. And actually, an everlasting gobstopper is a pretty good touchstone Thank for you. What they think, what we actually like about that multiverse idea, right? Which is it has endless permutations, but it's fundamentally the same always, right? And the Matrix is actually fundamentally the same always, right? Yes. And that's one thing about it that's kind of interesting.
Movie to movie,
like,
or the universes are?
The universes are fundamentally the same. Like, almost everything about them are based on the same rules. They never violate our understanding of reality as we know it, other than time has elapsed and events have occurred, with the exception of Neo's magic powers.
They're technically explained. They're not magic.
Are his ability to stop the actual ship in the real world, is that explained?
He's wirelessly connected. I did my research.
Oh, you dug in. He's wirelessly connected.
I'm excited to hear about that.
He's
well,
yeah,
even if it turns out
unimportant.
Let's just say, even if that explanation turns out to be nonsense, if that was the artist's intention, that's interesting to know that, you know, whether or not
they
are
have
trying
an
to
explanation.
Make that point or
that's,
not.
That's, I think, the crux of what our discussion is going to be about.
Great, great.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, my argument will be that that's a little bit of some Lucas midichlorian shit is what that'll
be. Yeah, no. I don't care about I mean, I think it's important important, like Michael just said, but I think this movie, the most interesting conversation that can come out of it is about free will and choice, right?
That's I don't know point. If I think that's the most interesting one. All right, we'll move it's on. One of them. I think the idea of, again, trying to contain reality in a container that's comprehensible is the major project of the multiverse. And they did that here by basically creating reality as a computer program, right? And then the reality in which the humans live against the robots is basically like one city and some tunnels. Like, it's a fucking small world, the real world, right? It's real small. And I think that says something about the project here as a multiverse project. It's always about making it smaller, making it fit into a smaller and smaller bubble. That's what this multiverse really is. But yes, I do want to talk about free will.
I do disagree with that. But
of course, but you'll let me finish like a good host will. My final point is that I think the Matrix also wants us to think that the layers of reality also nest in on our media, as in media itself is a kind of nested reality. And I'm drawing from the most recent film to be the best proof text for that. But I would say there's also proofs for that in the Matrix itself, that like it has nested in it the idea that the things that we're creating, like the art we're creating, are also realities, and that they are as real as our reality is.
Very Space Jam.
Yeah, yeah. So like in a real
the
sense, human beings,
reality, the
right,
core.
In a very important way, humans are the artists and creators of all realities.
We're gods.
Exactly. Exactly. That's my final point, and now I can see the floor.
No,
to
that's
Swain.
Good points. I like it.
And I won't ask Abe's permission. Oh, he'll just give it, I guess, thereby still implying that he's
I
in
give
control.
You permission.
Wow, you're good. You're good with the little subtle social cues. yeah. Well, you guys said so much that I think is very on point and interesting. And of course, it must be said, like, the Matrix has. We've all seen it so many times that I can like play it frontwards and backwards in my head. But I do think real quick, in case there's the odd person who haven't seen it, the Matrix is a simulated reality that intelligent machines created to distract humans while using their bodies as an energy source, and an example of the cyberpunk subgenre. And something that we haven't talked about, of course, is the bullet time, in which the heightened perceptions of certain characters is represented by allowing the action within a shot to progress in slow motion while the camera appears to move through the scene at normal speed, allowing the sped up movements of certain characters to be perceived normally.
That's right.
Yep.
That's exactly what bullet time is.
Yeah. And that's just what really stuck out to me this time watching it again. Because I've seen it so many times, that was just like the stuff that really jumped out. Was like sort of that more metaphysical stuff, you know, like while rescuing Morpheus, Neo gains confidence in his abilities, performing feats comparable to those of the agents.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the growth in the hero's journey. That's the part where he learns and grows.
Why did that jump out at you? Is it because it's kick-ass?
It was decided to film in Australia to make the most of the budget. Which I think is kick-ass in a way.
I agree. There's a lot of
you know,
truth, yeah. Objective truth coming up from Michael right now.
Yeah.
So let's all talk. Let's all jump into the next segment, to verses on verses. Well, this is where we kind of talk about what it contributes to the multiverse question. How did it use the multiverse uniquely? And in general, just thoughts we had when we watched The Matrix from 1999. Mm-hmm. Any other trivia you want to add?
Well, it's not trivia per se, just because it's an organic thought that arose as you said that, actually. Sparking off of the 1999 thing, it's interesting that in 1997, the Wachowskis had Reeves read Simulacra and Simulation, Kevin Kelly's Out of Control, The New Biology of Machines, Social Systems, and the Economic World, and Dylan Evans's Ideas on Evolutionary Psychology.
No way!
Yeah, Moss commented that she had difficulty with this process.
That's crazy.
I think so.
I think so. So, Adam.
I want this to keep going.
So you came out of the gate pretty hot.
Yeah.
I want to talk about one particular moment in this movie.
Let's do
and
it.
I want to get your take on it.
Let's do it.
Because Morpheus at one point says, you want to know what the Matrix is? This is paraphrased. I didn't write it down. Mm-hmm. It's control. And basically, I'm thinking that this movie is the only movie that we've covered so far on this podcast that fights against what we perceive as the real world. In fact, the real world, there's nothing natural about it. And that kind of echoes from what you were saying, which is that there's maybe a different rules or skill set because we just know the Matrix.
So by that, do you mean like that these two dimensions are in conflict? Like this is the first time we've seen them in actual conflict?
No, well, I mean, it all consolidates in it. There's only one universe. There's no multiverse in this movie.
It's
there's
not,
just multiple
it's
realities.
Not positing a multiverse, ostensibly.
Right,
correct.
It's just saying perception is reality.
Sure.
Therefore, you can live in a state of like a prison, like you're just a little battery, right?
Yes.
My question, though, is that he's saying the Matrix is control. This is a movie that fights against reality. Reality, like, what other movies do that? And do you agree that that is what this movie does, I guess, to both of you?
I think, in a sense... Well, I think you could say Everything Everywhere All at Once is also fighting against reality, because I think that you in that movie, the antagonist character has sort of agreed on the ultimate meaninglessness of reality. And so the hero's journey in that becomes a kind of combating against the, I don't want to call it the fact, but the sort of the most obvious conclusion about reality by finding some other interpretation, finding some other way. And so I think the idea that there is a conflict between at least the hero and reality is sort of the basis for every metaverse, like, story, multiverse story, you know?
I do want to be a little bit nitpicky on this.
Okay.
Because I do think that the key is that they're fighting against the stopping of all things in that movie. The stopping of, like, complete nihilism and darkness.
Mm-hmm.
There is no one to... In fact, the movie goes out of its way to say all of these realities, like all of her realities, are equally important. There's one that she belongs to,
there's
but
one
they
that
all
she, that's
exist.
Her point of origin, right.
And they're not fighting each other. In fact, they work with each other. This movie is actually saying the reverse. It's one... reality versus another. You have to choose.
That's true.
And
right?
Is one better than the other?
And is I think they make an argument, yes.
I say rhetorically because I've seen it, so the answer's obvious, but like, you, what would you say?
The movie suggests that real, you know, to whatever degree reality is, actually corresponds to the sensations actually happening to you, that's better than living in the illusion, right?
Mm.
Like that's kind of the moral of it, is like illusion equals bad.
Illusion is
and,
bad.
You know, reality is always better. Yes. Always
red pill.
Do you
agree, Michael?
Yeah, well, Keanu described his character as someone who felt that something was wrong and was searching for Morpheus and the truth to break free. Will uh-huh. Smith turned down the role of Neo to do Wild Wild West.
All true. And then you have Cypher. You know, Cypher is a guy who chooses the stake, right?
Yeah.
So you have...
Yeah, a disgruntled crew member who betrayed Morpheus in exchange for a deal to be plugged back into
right.
the Matrix to live a comfortable life. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And yeah. By choosing the stake, I think what's cool about the Matrix is it says you can live in the delusion. It's fine. Go live in your delusion, man. You know, like, but it's all fucked. And I think that's a qualification that it boldly makes. And I think that that's really cool.
Well, wait, I don't think it ever advocates that living in the delusion is a good
absolutely
thing.
Absolutely it does. It says it's your choice. In fact, that's the last
Well, it
monologue.
Says that it's a choice.
Yeah, he says what you do with that information is up to you.
But that doesn't mean it's good. That just means that it's that they're not going to violate your sense of choice. They're going to let you live there if you want to.
It's true that it is negating an is-ought principle by choosing one side, right? Is-ought meaning like just because it is true doesn't mean it necessarily should be true. It's just showing you reality, and it is also saying that this is what reality is. It doesn't have to be that way, but it does no hand-holding person to person in terms of if you choose blue or a red pill. In fact, it just says a certain percentage of the population just have a higher chance of negating the acceptance of the illusion. That's what the Matrix lore says.
Yeah, but I think that's a little bit of sophistry here, because I feel like the movie pretty clearly indicates that there are some who are curious and talented and interesting, and those people choose reality, and they also happen to be the right age, right? And that ultimately, like in a Buddhist scheme, ultimately the goal is to free everybody from the Matrix, even if they quote-unquote have the information and don't choose it. Tearing down the Matrix is the goal. That's where the first trilogy ends, you know, a truce where the Matrix no longer exists.
Right.
You know, so like, I don't think the movie is neutral about which of those realities matters more or is good.
I think it's a personal journey, and we're following heroes, you know, it's a transformation story, but it's a personal transformation story. It's not one for
everyone.
It's also
a social one, right? Like, why is he's the one because of what he means to the collective. The entire franchise is predicated on the messianic overtones here.
True. I mean, that's, yeah, of course. I mean, and there's always going to be some magical kind of like, why are they all here? Is it destiny kind of thing? Because it is, he's a special boy. And, you know.
But he's a special boy in the classic sense. Not just that he's the protagonist with superpowers. He's a special boy in that he has the role of saving people. Like he's a Christ type.
Yeah, he is. But all of the previous versions of him chose to just keep humanity alive and keep the illusion. He's the first one that actually like said like, no, I'm actually going to try to like beat them. So he's like the one
and that makes him the best one.
Yeah. But every time that this has happened, like the special boy has done their job, which is saved humanity. He was the one who was arrogant enough to say, I'm going to save humanity, but all in like a crazier, even
but in a better way.
You're talking about the franchise as a whole, right? It's also interesting back in the Matrix, Neo makes a telephone call promising the machines he will show their prisoners, quote, a world where anything is possible. He hangs up and flies away. Mm-hmm. So it seems like definitive to me in that sense.
Yeah,
can't dispute that.
That freeing them is good, right? That it's saying that he's going to free them. He's Superman now.
He is Superman in the Matrix. Yeah. So yes,
I want to take Abe's side on it from a slightly different angle, which is I do think it's interesting to cast aside the morality that the movie wants to glaze on this construct, and like actually. Ask the question whether the movie intends it or not, like, is Cypher's choice actually wrong?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. That, I think that's interesting, independent of what the movie says. Like, is Cypher wrong? is Cypher wrong by the rules of the movie, even?
What is wrong? What is right and wrong, though?
Well, I mean,
and also him having
that.
Powers
that's really the
is in a different, in the quote unquote real world, is in a different.
Exactly.
So, in this, his superpowers are only. Perception, right? If I'm understanding
the superpowers as we understand it from the Matrix alone, not from whatever supplemental material, suggest that he is freer and more capable of understanding the illusion of the Matrix than anyone else. That's what makes him the one.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of he's enlightened, if you will, right? Which is why at the end of the movie he sees the Matrix. He literally sees it.
It's a special way that only he can understand. That's what makes him special.
That's true. Yeah, only he can perceive it at its core level.
Like if I was in the Matrix, I'd be like a shitty guy. I'd be Cypher.
Right, exactly. But to be clear, what he sees is literally the same thing that everybody sees when they're outside of the Matrix. Like he sees the code of it, right? So like his special ability is that he's able to transcend the code from within. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, the reason I asked I wanted to take your thing and run with it, Abe, is because I do think it's interesting when you think about which reality is preferred or like which is good and which is bad. I think the fact that Neo can exercise magic powers outside of the simulated reality suggests the only thing that really should dictate which reality you choose is which one is more comfortable for you. Or pleasant for you.
Yes.
Right?
What you can live with, I think is actually the better, though.
Yeah, what you can live with. I agree. So, like, I actually believe his heroic powers in the real world make it so that it would be better to be in the simulation, because you can never trust that the reality that you're in is not a simulation. Like, you'll never know it's not a simulation once there is no grounded rules in the reality that's quote unquote real.
Yeah, right? They don't really play that game until a little later in the franchise, where we do ask questions of, is this magic or are we in another matrix? Because I don't think that they actually ever do, is it a matrix inside a matrix kind of thing.
No, they leave it open, I think, for a conversation.
Yeah, they
about
hint at it because of situations that happen in the real world, but ultimately that's not what they're here to say, because I think that's important. Like, something that's a common kind of understanding now is about how the Wachowskis made this movie in a kind of a parallel, like their transition, basically, their right. personal transformation and the choices of agency. The fact that they also said it about like a corporate system, like that's how they set up, you know, Thomas Anderson, you know, Neo before he's Neo, he's this corporate kind of soulless person. Mm-hmm. What I love about that is that it talks directly to people who don't fit in, people, and pushes that choice and identity are one and the same, right? So because of that, I think everything comes down to choice. Choice is God, in another way of saying, like, in this movie, because it's a simple hero story. It's a very universal way of telling the story, but like, identity is the answer. And so you're absolutely right. And when we talk about Cypher, like, there is this concept at play that is whatever works for you, whatever you can live with, is that's the right answer. That's the pill you take. When you're making a transformation, what is your destiny? What side are you on that? Now, I think that that's probably, like, I use the word side, and that makes it a very binary thing, because I think they were talking mm-hmm. about gender specifically. I think there's the interpretation is that they were forming a binary kind of system. You can see that in the production design. There's a lot of alternating tiles. Doors are always double doors. Windows comes in twos. You know, it's just like everything they're doing about this movie is like, it's one or the other, red pill or it's a blue pill. Granted, there's shades of it that I think that the later matrices talk about. But like, to me, I don't know how you can get through this movie without saying like, there's no balance to restore. There's just the agency that is offered by your identity and the right identity that you have.
I would say it's authenticity. Like, I would say this movie really values the idea of authenticity and puts a lot of illusions and things that people find as illusory or meaningless as obstacles. Like, it's no accident that Neo is working for a corporate soulless conglomerate to start, right? Because, like, that's the first illusion. Work and working for people like this who are scumbags. You know, they didn't even really have to spend time on that for us to understand what the metaphor there is, right? Right? Or like, I do think that the filmmakers are tilting the balance in one way or the other, and by framing this conversation as a social justice fight, which they do. Like, they are kind of tilting toward, like, there is an authentic way of life and there's an inauthentic way of life. Like, and I mean, you know, and it's very inspired by the Eastern religion tropes, right? Like, where, like, certainly if you choose to live and not acknowledge the truths of the Buddha, like, then, you know, you're living an inauthentic life, which will create karmic problems for you. And I think that they don't really spend time on the karmic problems because they think that you already know them. They think, you know how your job is bullshit, right?
That's right.
You know how, like, reality sucks if you think about it, right? Mm-hmm. Like they kind of just assume that you agree that we're all suffering. Mm-hmm.
And what does Cypher ask for when he goes back in? He's like, I want to be rich.
Make me an actor.
Make me someone who has power and privilege, yeah. You know?
Right. Tilt the balance in my favor. And They are still operating with at least a mildly Western understanding of, like, what is good and bad in society. Like, there is a right and wrong in that respect.
Yeah, but that's a personal choice, I think. Right?
Also, in the original script, Switch was a woman in the Matrix and a man in the real world, but this idea was ultimately dropped.
Fuck!
And in 2016 GLAAD Media Awards speech, Lily Wachowski said, "There's a critical eye being cast back on Lana and I's work through the lens of our transness. This is a cool thing because it's an excellent reminder that art is never static," which to me also implies that she may be granting in the subtext there that it was part of it, but it wasn't what they were consciously thinking at the time, or what, or you know, it by virtue of saying that it's not static.
Strangely astute quote there.
I like how fluid they are with the meaning of their movie too. I think that's
cool. Important for something like a work like this where it is highly philosophical. I think you need to kind of do that.
And can I ask, I wish
they'd done that idea.
Are stuff I'm saying interesting? Because I feel like you guys are sparking off each other like a lot, which is really awesome.
It's really awesome.
I just hope, I feel like I'm saying interesting stuff. Like in 2012, the film was selected for preservation in the U.S. National Film Registry by the Library of Congress for being culturally and aesthetically significant. And no one's, like, you have nothing to add to that?
Let me break it down to you, man. We're having like a tit for tat kind of conversation over here, but you're just straight. You're straight vibes, dude.
Okay.
Don't worry about it, dude.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Hell yeah.
You're straight vibes of truth. Do you mind if I take this at a slightly different trajectory? Is that cool?
Yes, please.
So, why do we want to do this like Russian nesting doll idea of like reality? And by the way, this is like not the only film that does this. Men in Black does this, right? Like this is like in again, this is why I said Elizabethan cosmology. Like this is an idea that you see sometimes in like the macro and micro realities of like antiquity and medieval times. They all have a certain way they work. There's a kind of uniformity down through the levels, if you will. Like, why do we like that? Is it just because we like to organize shit?
I think we're pattern recognizers, right? Ever since we were looking into the trees and we're like, snake or not snake. And so we organize our thoughts in a way that is like, all right, you are in a box.
The first captcha.
Yeah, exactly. That was the first orb.
It was also the first Letterman bit. Snake or not snake.
I think it's we put it in boxes because it gives us comfort, because I think we're evolutionarily predisposed to do that. That's just how we came out of the box.
And yet that's true. And yet rarely do the evolutionary proclivities become such sources of meaning as this one does.
In what sense?
You know, well, like we're also inclined to I got to find something more innocuous, I guess. We're inclined to want to live indoors because it's safer there. You know?
I want to know what the spicy version of that was.
Yeah, what was the spicy version of that?
We're inclined to have sex with our mothers. I can't say that. Let's see.
I can't say that one. Yikes. No, so like, but you'll never see a movie about like, if only I had a house. You know what I mean? Unless it's like the story of a person like rising to... like out of poverty or something like because then the story is more about poverty and being an outcast from society. But like some of these more primal urges that we meet more immediately, I guess.
Wait, are you saying
become interesting
because
fodder.
Shelter is a primal urge that there should be a subgenre of movies about people finding like Life is a House and The House of Sand and Fog where people find housing?
Well, that's why I'm saying, why isn't
like, why
is more of a genre than it is?
That should be a subgenre.
Right. Well, because the other point being that, like, just because it's an evolutionary proclivity, and I agree that it is, doesn't mean that's why we're interested in it in stories.
But I would argue that pattern recognition has been so rewarding for us as a species that it's highly, even despite horrible side effects. Like, I think institutional racism is arguably a side effect of our need to categorize by visual patterns. And yet pattern recognition, I mean, finding shelter is also important for survival. But I guess I'll just say I see why pattern recognition keeps perpetuating itself, because it pays out a lot, right? Like, it gives us, I mean, it's arguable, but like, it gives us stuff that in the short term we think we want, like missiles and cars and shit. And it's like, pattern recognition gave you this. Whether or not it's a moral good or leads to the best outcome over the 1,000-year span or whatever I'm saying. Pattern recognition gets the job done. Like, it might be a dirty motherfucker, but it gets the job done. Whereas, I don't know, the primal urge to just find shelter, it makes you safe, but now that we've achieved that, I don't have a further incentive to nurture that urge, but pattern recognition is still helping me day to day navigate traffic.
Well, have we achieved it?
Not
all individuals, but on balance for a lot of individuals, yes. A lot of people don't.
Yeah, on balance. I don't disagree
with
you.
That could be a privileged viewpoint. I see that.
I guess what I'm really, well, and see, like, I'm not even sure that I like these categories as the only way to explain it. Like, I find those explanations a little bit.
Talk about what's in your heart, Adam.
No, I think they're true. I think they're true, but I don't think they fully satisfy.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're right. I am bullshitting you. You're right. I should just say what I want to say. So,
and you don't even take into account, the character that that Hugo Weaving plays. And he stated that he found that character amusing and enjoyable to play.
No, get out of town.
Yeah. Sure. And wait, fellas, there's more. When filming began, more is coming to me as I think about it. Weaving mentioned that he was excited to be a part of something that would extend him as an actor. Jean Reno was offered the role, but declined.
Jean Reno was offered the role? Can you even fucking imagine that? Can you even imagine that?
And that is the circumstances of Hugo Weaving in... Mm-hmm. The late 90s. Thank you for that.
They had also, side note, they originally discussed it heavily with Sandra Bullock to be Neil.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a side note. That's just another note. Right. But
they had discussed with Sandra mm-hmm. Bullock to be Neo.
Adam, don't fall into
it. I mean, it is a little bit of a trivia Medusa here, but I have to look at it a little
bit.
He's
like the siren song of Wikipedia.
But
you're blown
that
away
is
by
fucking
that.
Amazing.
That one gets you.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock, huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
See? Well, I say interesting stuff. They must have done something right, because it surpassed Lost in Space and A Decent Proposal for having the biggest April and Easter opening weekends ever.
That's true. What if he snuck one lie in? I bet he's going to try to sneak in one lie.
I'll never know. I will never
I'm
read
never
the Wikipedia
fucking,
page
no,
on the
no,
Matrix.
No. Although,
why the hell would I do that?
In 2002, those records for the largest April and Easter opening weekends were taken away by the Scorpion King.
This is too long.
By the Scorpion King.
Yeah.
That's a sad fact.
I don't like where this is going. So I'm going to, I want Adam to speak about what he wanted to
speak.
I don't
know. I kind of feel like
God
Mike is podcast
it.
Here.
I'm the asshole like for wanting podcast. To keep the conversation going. Is that how this has happened?
I think he's the asshole.
What?
I mean, I'm an asshole in the broad sense all the time. So, I don't think I've acted out of character asshole, if that's what you mean. So, I don't have a clear answer, but I will say that I do think it's interesting how often the idea of sort of infinite regression in both a horizontal and vertical way keeps popping up to us. I think, actually, Men in Black is a little bit of a better version of this, where, it's actually kind of absurd that the universe is the size that it is,
mm-hmm.
when it could very easily be...
Well, relative size.
Yeah, it is hard to grapple with, yeah.
Yeah, the relative size, right? Well, but also, but it could also just be, the size of a button on a cat's collar, you know what I mean? And they do
compared
such a great job with that.
And then you're like, wait, nothing's anything.
Yeah, nothing's anything. Right, exactly. It the Russian nesting doll idea accidentally makes all relativity arbitrary.
Makes us grapple with relativity and infinity,
Right.
But then it makes it arbitrary. You know what I mean? And I feel like it actually achieves the opposite of the reason why we want to do it usually. The reason why we want to do it, I think, is again about trying to contain and create an author reality. That's how it's used here again. And I think that part is interesting. But again, it has this opposite effect of once you can sort of contain reality in a hard drive, then the difference between the reality contained in a hard drive and the reality in the shitty machine world becomes somewhat arbitrary. And so the morality that you're fighting for, or even the authenticity you're fighting for, becomes a little bit arbitrary and meaningless.
Wait, are you trying to go for we have an obsession with designing a creator species or something that is deterministic for us? Is that where you is that where this
no,
is going?
That's an interesting outworking of no. It's I actually don't have a specific I'm going at this.
Well, okay.
But good, I think I'm going at every time we try to contain the chaos of a multiverse in a nicely understood slot, it ends up melting the sort of parameters that we're containing it in.
If I'm being real, I think that's a part of humanity. Like, there's a reason why we like Cinderella stories and we like, you know, swashbucklers and like rogues. The reason is, especially in hero stories, we like the idea of, we kind of like the chaos and we don't like being told what to do. And so the second that we hear there's rules, we want to break them. Even though we understand the kind of social contract reason, like we're not idiots and we obey rules that make sense, but also there's this like sick, twisted kind of satisfaction that comes from mainly our art and entertainment, where we seek that kind of devil. And part of that is the destruction of the rules themselves, which means that we have to attack and dethrone God. I think that's...
Oh, I think it's the other
that's
way.
That's what this
he
movie
has
is.
To kill us, and he does.
Yeah,
that's, he does. That's right. And that's the previous iterations of the Matrix. They win. They win the agreement, even though we get to
but we
succeed
get to
in living.
Exist always,
but
right?
That is not that's not real. That's not real. That's a facade, right? Mm-hmm. That's not real living.
And I'm saying that distinction is arbitrary under these constructs.
And I think that the whole point of the movie, the Wachowskis are saying
that one is preferable.
One completely qualify them. One cannot, you can choose to be with something and you can be a part of the problem. The right way is to do the red pill.
Wait, so you've occupied both positions here. It's like listening to a Derrida poem.
I'm saying that they are arguing you can choose either way. They qualify each choice to the individual. And that's unique in the multiverse.
Yeah, one's a good choice and one's a
bad
choice.
Right, and a choice for one person isn't holistically overall the good choice for everyone necessarily. It's just you.
That's not, but that's your morality that you're putting
on
the movie.
No, that's
though.
The morality that the Matrix is trying to espouse, in my opinion.
Show me it in the
film.
They
give literally everyone a choice
yeah, because otherwise it would be intellectual violence,
right? Yeah,
but that's literally the same as like, okay, everyone gets a vote, but we still want them to vote for the right people. Please don't vote for Hitler, but you still get to vote.
Yes, you're right.
And now we can end the podcast.
But the whole point of the Matrix is to say that it's your answer isn't my answer, isn't my answer is my answer. But the important part is that there's no normative answer. If there were a normative answer, everyone would be unhappy. This is the movie that says you have a choice.
They do say that about the simulation.
Yes.
They do say about the simulation, the people wouldn't accept the all positive version. They needed there to be conflict because...
they do say that.
Like, which sort of suggests... Yeah, they say that. So that is a point in favor of Abe's argument here.
And podcast.
And podcast. No, I think we might disagree about what they're saying. I find that I often disagree with what you take from movies.
Oh. Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, we agree on what the movie is, and we often agree on what it's saying until we talk about the conclusion. Mm-hmm. And that's when I feel like you and I end up on opposite ends of what we're taking from this movie.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Like, I agree with what you're concluding, like on a philosophical level. I think you're right philosophically, mm-hmm. but I don't agree the movie saying it.
Yeah. And you, okay, all right. The cool thing is you can like choose to be wrong and you do.
Freedom of choice, baby.
Okay. And I enjoy this high school cool guy argument you're making right now.
I'm smoking a cigarette right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a pack of cards tucked in my sleeve.
Michael, do you have a thought on this or are you just going to regurgitate some garbage?
Neo's my favorite ever science fiction hero. Absolutely. Said Whedon.
Said Whedon.
Will
amazing.
But you did talk That's about amazing. Violence and... the Wachowskis' approach to action scenes drew upon their admiration for Japanese animation, such as Ninja Scroll.
Fucking hell.
This is a great bit. This is a truly great bit.
You know what this podcast is becoming? It's becoming like that Nickelodeon Guts games that you're like trying to go through the monkey bars and there's just big like pistons coming and trying to knock you off.
Oh,
and
like
shit.
Double Dare?
Yeah, like Double
Dare. It's becoming Double Dare?
I feel like this is Double
Fuck,
Dare.
Fuck, I wish we were fucking Double
Let's
Dare.
Let's just play Double
Pick
Dare.
Pick that nose,
dude.
Abe.
Is that
find that flag in the nose, bro.
Oh, is that the...
Pick that fucking nose, bro.
Is that the Craig? What's the name? Is it the Gray? I've never
I actually know quite a bit about Nickelodeon's Double Dare.
Mark Summers? Are you talking about Mark Summers?
Yeah, Mark Summers.
Uber Craig? Yeah. No. What's the name of the thing that they... No, I'm thinking of Legend of the Temple.
Yeah, you're all over the place right now.
Olmec?
Olmec.
I don't know. What's the thing that they run up at the
You are fucking out of control right
I've
now.
Never watched an hour of Nickelodeon. So this is all just through cultural osmosis. What's the mountain that they run up at the end of the...
That's the Aggro Crag. You're talking
that's
about...
That's Aggro Crag.
Yeah, Aggro Crag. That's a different
I thought it was like
thing.
They named a mountain Craig. My
yeah,
bad.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, Olmec's the name of the Legends of the Hidden Temple head.
I think I'm going to cut this entire podcast. I'm just going to cut it. I'm gonna
but
cut
I
it
do
out.
Feel like this podcast is I'm just taking loose shots from the left and right. God damn it.
You are drunk at the wheel, shooting at anything that passes you.
Yeah, it really, it's hard. It's hard doing. To focus on this.
I really like it. I really like it. You know what you're like? You're like Morpheus in that fight in the second movie on top of the truck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're like, good... I don't know if I should be doing this one. This might be a little beyond me here.
You might have to just hobble over to the next car over here. Yeah, no.
Now, that truck fight is still, I think, my favorite fight
that
ever.
That thing is amazing.
That truck fight fucking slaps, to use an abism.
Yeah, and this, that's not mean. I don't own that, I don't think.
You always say
I
it.
Do love saying
it's
it.
You.
I love it. Yeah, words love it. Are great. The... fights in this, though, I forget how, I mean,
they're really special.
Michael
honestly,
talked
they're
about
really special.
Bullet time and how important it is, and namely how it's done. But, you know, like that shit still kind of holds up. And like the whole fight.
Yeah.
With all of the pillars exploding and like the.
What's funny is I feel like a lot of the filmmakers who've come and sort of iterated on fight scenes since then have all had to live with certain choices that they made for this movie. Like they've had to live with speed ramping, right? Like fights without speed ramping now seem really dumb, right? Or they have to live with the idea of cameras in motion capturing at least 180 degrees of the conflict, because if it doesn't do that, we feel like we didn't really see it. Like, oh, they're just cutting everywhere. Like, that's the thing is, like, they kind of eliminated cuts for fight scenes. They didn't really do that. But, like, a lot of the ways they filmed it made cutting in fight scenes seem really cheap and dumb. And like, that's such a profound transformation. It's not, like, the only thing I can think of it that's, like, akin is, like, they basically don't really make 3D platformers in video games anymore. And you know why? Because Mario kicked the shit out of that genre. Like they really don't make them anymore.
Find
know?
A reason to love Mario.
I mean, it's so easy, bro. There's
Kirby
so many.
And the Forgotten Land, many... highly regarded 3D platformer came out this year. Try it.
Sucks. I played it. It's not.
Yeah,
it's no
well,
Mario.
Adam Sternberg of Vulture.com credits The Matrix 3 inventing and setting the template for all modern superhero blockbusters and inspiring the superhero yep. renaissance of the early 21st century.
Holy
I mean, what's
fuck.
Really interesting is like it feels like we had a spike in like martial arts films and stuff after this, and now it's like really hard to make an interesting, innovative martial arts film because like The Matrix is still kind of the bar to clear, you know.
Mm. Yeah,
like not impossible, but like, and we see him still, but like The Matrix set such a high bar for that genre that, you know, we have to be really careful how we do them now.
And the sequels, both directed by the Wachowskis, they were filmed back to back in one shoot and released on separate dates in 2003.
I actually legitimately during this viewing stopped and went back when you remember when at the very beginning when they introduced Trinity and she jumps through yep. that window and like falls down that
it's so good
falls down yeah. that stairwell and then she like pulls out her guns really quickly when she hits the deck, you know, we all remember mm-hmm. like the pacing and the stark speed of that like sequence, right? And I yes. and I actually went back and I watched it and I was like, how did they do like how does it how did they make her seem like she's so fast when she like came up with the guns? And it's all fucking movie trickery. Like
it's all,
she
it's
was laying on.
Too, right?
It's clear that she, on that shot she's laying on the ground, and they're just like, and act like you just like came up. And the way that that works is that on the previous shot we have her land get a clear thump landing, and it's just like one after another makes that cut work seamlessly, and it's like. Just a simple trick, like they just cut yep. they she never actually fell, you know, like she just stood up. And it's just like, man, those tricks, they're old wisdom, but they really fucking nailed it. Like,
but really, really creatively deployed here, like really thoughtfully pre-visualized and executed.
Yeah.
And the rooftop set that Trinity uses to escape early in the film was left over from the production of Dark City.
That, you know what? I was wondering if that was true because that really looks like a Dark City like landscape. But that's an interesting. I don't know why I'm feeding the monster.
That's a meaningful comment. That's a meaningful comment.
Chad Stahelski Reeves' stunt double sustained several injuries, including
God
a broken rib.
You give him an inch, you know, and you just
and he takes a matrix mile.
We gotta have a spray bottle.
Reeves lost 15 pounds and shaved his whole body.
Well, Abe, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think we're about ready to cross into the great celestial beyond and decide what to do with this wormhole.
This is a segment we call Closing the Wormhole, and this is, again, where I don't fucking know how we do this. I think it's just stay or go. That's the only choices, right?
Would you take the rules of this universe, however you define that, and I think you can describe that a bit if you want. Would you hybridize them with the real world, live in that world, or live in our world?
That sounds like
although
two things.
That is tricky because this is already a hybridized world between two worlds. So it's almost like a centaur hybridized with a human where there's some overlap, you know?
Right, right. And it's not really important if we stay or go, I guess, except for canon. We have to
and
we
to
have
our
to
future,
leave
like
this
where
multiverse.
We exist and whether we ever make it home.
Yeah, your life does matter, Abe.
That's true.
Your life does matter if movies have taught me anything.
Well, I'm going to hybridize because I think this is reality in our future.
You think there will be a matrix?
I think the AI is going to get us. Yeah.
Interesting.
Is that a real belief or are you trolling?
I'm a real belief, dude.
And in real life, do you think it's bad? So we've asked this on other pods, but it seems to make sense here. Is living in a pod, well, different kind of pod, is living in a pod with joy pumped into your brain digitally, is that bad?
Yes.
Oh, you do think it's bad inherently to be totally.
You do think it's bad.
I do think it's inherently
and only
bad,
live
yes.
through your perceptions. Okay.
But I would hate to live in the real world. It's
if
all
that's
bad.
What everyone else is
it's
doing.
It's just bad.
Right. It's the best case scenario in that world.
If we're ever in a simulation, which I do think humanity will be at some point in its future, or it's killed itself and it's problem solved, baby. If that is the circumstance, I would hope that we free the shackles of our robot oppressors. That's my stance.
Free the shackles.
Free ourselves from the shackles.
From the shackles. Yeah, okay, got it.
What about you guys?
Okay. Well, I want to hear Mike's response to that.
Wait, is this shit just the 13th floor?
It's been a little bit since I watched the 13th floor, but sure.
I mean, obviously I've watched it many times, but now I think like so much of our conversation's making sense to me now.
It all sounds like, holy shit, you might be right.
Well,
they might be parallel films.
Yeah. I would live in it. I'd live in the Matrix. And I mean the human world of Zion within the film, The Matrix. That's the happy medium for me.
You live in the real world in the Matrix.
The quote-unquote real movie
that's
world.
That's fucking the right answer, yeah.
Just
Ew,
because...
Really?
Well, it also contains three video games. Enter the Matrix, which contains footage shot specifically for the game and chronicles events between and during the Matrix Reloaded. The Matrix Online 2004, an MMORPG, which continued the story behind Matrix Revolutions. And the Matrix Path of Neo, which focuses on Neo's journey.
I love that answer, but except for like the nonsense that he talked about after. But like, he's right about the rave culture that humanity decided. Like, they are positing in this movie that when society is woken up, what are they like? What society they form? Do they form a democracy? Do they form a no? It's
a raveocracy.
The important part is that they have raves.
They're a raveogarchy,
and you fuck everybody.
Computer
that's,
programmer Thomas Anderson.
That's pretty good.
Uncovers
little,
the truth and joins a rebellion against machines.
They're a little light on the fucking though. Like it really seems more like it's just a fun
fucking
dance party.
Wait, did you just sum up? Did you just give a log line for the Matrix, Michael? Did you just say what the Matrix was?
Adam was saying something really interesting, and I kind of zoned out. I don't know whose words were flying everywhere.
That's kind of how I would. That's the log line for this podcast.
But soon,
I think.
Before we wrap up, The Matrix became a co-production of Warner Brothers and Village Roadshow Pictures.
That's true.
No.
Yeah.
Adam.
Yeah. I will never live in this world. I would never live in this world. Even if reality is an illusion, a thing that I can't entirely rule out, nobody can. Mm-hmm. I think being aware of that illusion makes it impossible on principle to accept. I agree with the Matrix, with like the filmmakers' emotional undercurrent, like their moral emotional undercurrent that they believe about this world. And the real world in it sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you're fighting oppressors and stuff. Like, it sucks.
It's not fun.
You want to live with... No, it sucks.
I know.
But like, it's... nothing about that place seems fun to be in at all. They don't even have colors there.
They don't.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, it's...
But you know what they do? They do have raves. They have mad raves.
I like the raves, but I would miss, like, you know, the color orange. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think there's a single orange in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
All right.
So also, we didn't talk about the effect of being Agent Smithed, a thing that on a long enough timeline we'd all experience, right?
Yeah,
where, like, you become Agent Smith.
And I didn't even I realized, but I always forgot that every time an agent takes it over a person in the Matrix, like some Cthulhu bot in the real world is triggered to slurp up another real human.
Like, is that what they do? Like, so you die then?
Yeah, a sneaky number of bodies are dropping in this movie.
So it'd be like it'd be essentially it's the Matrix equivalent of like a sudden stroke or something.
Yeah, control all delete kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Like just a brain aneurysm. Like that's how they experience it. And it's just over.
Yep.
Like it's like the end of Sopranos.
Or they just leave you alive and like they do with Neo, and you just like slip down the little slip and slide of goo and then you just
that
dissolve.
That does look fun, by the way.
And then you just dissolve in whatever
that slide looks
that
fun.
Is.
Just fallen like that dude in the Titanic.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, Leonardo DiCaprio initially accepted the role of Neo, but turned it down because he didn't want to do a visual effects film after
that
Titanic.
Is profound. So we should throw him out like the airlock, right?
Well, you're getting really annoyed with him. I feel like I'm learning. I'm learning.
You
a
were
lot
into it 15 minutes ago. Now you're
I've
sick
been
of it.
I've been into it.
I'm willy nilly. I change. Yeah. I would change what I want, baby. I don't need to be consistent.
But, and I have to say, there's been no version of Abe who wasn't willy nilly. Open in reality, like a can of beans,
like a normal can of beans.
Like a normal one. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. A trivia, Mike.
It's not. Yeah, you're an asshole.
Who, me?
Yeah.
It was not strictly trivia. I resent that you're diminishing my metaphysical and craft thoughts, like how the photogrammetric and image-based computer-generated background approaches in bullet time sequences evolved into innovations unveiled in the sequels and now used in other movies.
Let me add them.
I'm more getting mad now, not about what the trivia is, but about the long setup for it every time. I can't believe this thing. Like, here comes the joke.
Let me add them, Adam.
Mad at the setups. Yeah, go ahead. I can't, you know, I'm going to fly right the fuck out of here to some Rage Against the Machine.
Mike, I'm going to put your head in a portal and then rip it off.
No! Don't leave me! While rescuing Morpheus, Neo gains confidence in his abilities, performing feats comparable to the agent!
And he's gone. Well, that was a good episode, and I'm glad we all did all this shit. This is a good use of time.
I love you, my man.
I love you, man.
Even more after what just happened.
I love you, man.
I love you, man.
Fuck yeah. What a great ending.
Let's just, like, zip out of here.
Is the implication I murdered a version of Michael, and then you said I love you? Because this is the best episode ever.
Is that the implication? That's what happened. That's not an implication. Those are the events.
Boo. Woo.
Oh, no. Ghost
they originally planned to shoot the subway scene in an actual subway station.
Let's get out
of
here.
The complexity of the fight and related wire work required shooting on a set.
I'm running into the...